but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Judah Dobie filling in solo today on the Bald-Faced Truth here on 750 The Game of the BFT Radio Network. It is All-Star Weekend in Indianapolis for the WNBA. Of course, the Portland Fire officially announcing their new name and logo this week in the city of Portland's got people excited. But there's a lot of other conversations around the league right now that I want to dig into. And what should Portland fans expect? What kind of players could we be getting here in Portland? And what's the timeline for everything? Still need a GM and a coach and all of that. Calvin Webb Wetzel is a basketball analyst for Her Hoop Stats and CBS Sports. You can't go long on CBS Sports Network without seeing Calvin Wetzel pop up talking women's hoops. And he joins us now from Indy in the All-Star Game. Calvin, what's up, man? Thanks for making time.
Hey, I'm good, Judah. What's going on? Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, my friend. It's All-Star Weekend out there. How are the vibes?
Oh, it's great, man. I love these big women's basketball events, whether you talk about college, Final Fours, All-Star Weekends, WNBA Finals, where kind of everyone comes together, you know, in one place and just celebrates the sport, and you walk around, and Indy's downtown is kind of tight, so everything's very walkable, and the weather's great, and you walk around, you see, like, fat heads or you know, the big, like, faces of Caitlin Clark and Kelsey Mitchell and Aaliyah Boston, all the Fever players on, like, the windows of the local businesses and stuff like that. And you have the, you know, the stuff for the fans and for the kids to, like, take photos, all the different stuff going on. It's a really cool time and a really fun atmosphere here.
Enthusiasm still high despite the recent injury to Caitlin Clark?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, fortunately, the Fever do have three all-stars, so they still have two healthy ones. And obviously, there's still so much talent, you know, in terms of the skills challenge, three-point contest. You mentioned Sabrina headlining that. And then the all-star game itself, absolutely still a lot of hype around it. I think everyone's disappointed Caitlin won't be in it, especially this year of all years. Being in Indy, I know she was really looking forward to it, and she put out that statement that she's obviously bummed, but she's going to be very involved coaching her team on the sidelines in the game, so she'll still be a part of the weekend.
Now, where have you come out on all this? You know, there's a lot of narrative, so I know you're a basketball guy. You're not so much a narrative guy, but the narrative comes with the territory when it comes to the WNBA and its popularity and trying to build it around Caitlin, et cetera. So what have you made of all this kind of narrative debate around Caitlin and the way, you know, it's perceived some opponents are treating her on the court, obviously the rivalry with Angel Reese and all of that? While that might not interest you as much, what have you made of just the overall discussion? Because it is bringing so much more attention to the league. You can debate, though, whether or not it's good for the league or not.
Yeah, that is a great debate. I think it's kind of a double-edged sword. Obviously, the attention on some level, all publicity is good publicity, maybe, or sure, whatever yeah. They say. But at the same time, some of it on the extremes does get to be really, you know, either the extreme on one side or the extreme on the other side, especially with like the rise in social media and things like that. It can get a little bit exhausting, and the real answer is always somewhere in the middle, as you know, but fans can go to all sorts of lengths on social media when they ride for their player or when they ride for their player's rival or things like that. And so it's really been crazy the last couple of years to see, since Caitlin Clark came into the league, the rapid growth of the casual fans and the new fans coming into the league. And then you have like the old heads who've been following since the late 90s, early 2000s. And there are a lot of growing pains, I think, with the league and the fandom trying to like integrate all of these different perspectives and people who are on different timelines and at different stages of their fandom. But in the end, overall, it is absolutely a net positive for the league to have all of this attention, no matter what that attention looks like.
Does the league, you know, not overextended, but how reliant is the league right now on Caitlin Clark? Are they desperate for her to be healthy and performing in order to grow at the rate that they need to? Or do you think too much is made of that with her stardom and what she means for the league?
I think the answer is yes and no. I wouldn't use the word desperate, but obviously she is a really important factor in the growth, and she has brought a lot of eyeballs and a lot of ratings. The TV ratings have been skyrocketing. Ticket sales, I heard some numbers this weekend at the All-Star game that ticket sales in, you know, like the cheapest nosebleed seats went from 170 to like 90 when Caitlin Clark was ruled out. It basically cut in half. So obviously there's a huge impact when you look at any type of number, however you want to measure it with ratings and revenue and things like that. But at the same time, the league was growing before Caitlin Clark got here. The year before her, it was a lot bigger than 2 years before her and so on. And the league is continuing to grow whether she's on the floor or not. You have other teams like the Golden State Valkyries, who I think we're going to talk about in a little bit, lead the league in attendance as an expansion team. They're selling out every game. They're ahead of the Indiana Fever, who are second in attendance. So there are other teams and other players who are drawing enough attention at this point, and the league is on the national radar, that I do think Caitlin Clark, they're not necessarily desperate for it. They're going to grow with or without her. It's just a matter of how fast they grow and how much they grow, and that's going to be very much accelerated with Caitlin Clark in the picture.
Yeah, we're talking to Calvin Wetzel, basketball analyst with Her Hoop Stats, also CBS Sports, and he's in Indy right now for the WNBA All-Star Weekend. It's funny, you know, you talk about Caitlin Clark's, you know, level of popularity with the league here in Oregon and Portland. Of course, we're biased and always interested in Sabrina Ionescu and what she's doing with the Liberty. They came out here for an exhibition at the start of the year. That was so much fun, and to see kind of the overwhelming support from Eugene. You know, what does Sabrina and her stardom continue to mean for the league after she came in a few years ago? And it wasn't exactly like the same, you know, type of, you know, popularity that she was infusing into the WNBA the way that Caitlin Clark is coming out of college. But she seems to have still been like a really steady presence with the Liberty and for the league as a whole. What kind of player is she, and what has she meant for the WNBA?
Yeah, she's been huge. And it's funny, when she came into the league, obviously the league was at a very different point. And honestly, at that time, compared to anything that we had really seen, she basically was the Caitlin Clark in terms of like this college superstar who transcended the sport and racked up triple doubles at Oregon the way Caitlin did at Iowa, and then came into the league and right away was like one of, if not the most popular players in the league. Obviously, what Caitlin Clark has done has blown that out of the water in terms of attention. But at the time, what Sabrina was basically that in terms of the level of attention that she was getting. But she has really established herself, because, you know, sometimes the narrative can be, you talked about the narrative, this player hasn't earned it yet. You know, they haven't set foot on the court yet. Why are they getting all the attention? You know, they haven't done anything. Like, we're veterans, you know, we've been here for a while. And that's like the one side of the narrative. But Sabrina has now earned her spot and earned a lot of respect in this league. She's been around for a while. She won a championship last year. She's a veteran. And you can even see some of those, you know, anonymous player polls like The Athletic puts out. Like, a lot of players really respect her now. And I think that her place in the league has definitely been solidified. And like what she's done in a 3-point contest and what she's done for the Liberty has been really cool to see.
So we're kind of keeping an eye on how expansion, you know, progress is going. We got a team in Portland. We're excited about that. We're really pumped about the WNBA to Portland team. They came out with a name. It's the Portland Fire. So they're hearkening back to the original WNBA team that was actually, you know, a pretty good draw, you know, before financially they weren't able to keep operating in the early 2000s. I'm curious, from your standpoint, canvassing the league, having a national perception, you know, what kind of sense do you have about the Portland Fire and the WNBA team, and what kind of conversations around the league are happening right now? Because you got two of them, right? Portland and Toronto coming in next year.
Yeah, you have Portland and Toronto, and you had, like I said, Golden State Valkyries coming in this year. So that'll be the second and third expansion teams of this era. And it's interesting, because with Portland, you know, maybe if you had nothing to compare to, people might not be raising an eyebrow so much. But when you look at Toronto, and Toronto, when they were announced over a year ago, they hired a GM, they announced their name, the Toronto Tempo, all of their branding, things like that. Portland basically just did that stuff. They just announced, you know, their name like last week. And so it's kind of felt, I think a lot of the sense around the league has kind of felt like Portland has been a little bit behind on the timeline of where things should be. You're going to have that expansion draft with those two teams in four and a half months, assuming it is the same time as when Golden State's expansion draft was last year. So obviously it's time to get the ball rolling on some of that stuff. And then you look at Golden State, and they've set the bar really, really high for expansion teams. Like I said, selling out every game, on pace to set an attendance record in the league. They're around 500, and they're like borderline playoff spot right now, which is remarkable for a team that was picked last or picked 12th out of 13 at best because they had to build their team through the expansion draft. So these teams are setting the bar really high, but I do think Portland is a city, as you know, as I'm sure all your listeners know, that is going to show up and really support this team. Despite all of that, they've already sold over 10,000 season tickets. So you know that the Portland Fire are going to have some support.
They certainly will. And, you know, the ownership group out here, like the Bethal family, they've got, you know, minority stake with the Sacramento Kings, you know, down there in Northern California. So they kind of know at least the basketball operation side of things. But you do mention that Golden State success. What is it about the Valkyries that's been so successful? But I mean, they've got the support and they've got the on-court success. I mean, that doesn't really happen for an expansion team, right?
No, in fact, I believe I heard the other day that the Golden Knights, the Vegas Golden Knights, are the only other expansion team in a major sport in the last, I want to say 50 years, I don't have the numbers exactly in front of me, to make the playoffs in year one. And of course, they made that run to the Stanley Cup final. And so the Valkyries have a shot to really do something historic if they can get into the playoffs. And they had to build their team basically with everyone's seventh best player. The expansion draft allowed everyone to protect six players. Valkyries took everyone's seventh best player and cobbled together this roster. And Natalie Nicasi, their head coach, has done an outstanding job defensively, coming up with elite game plans for who they're guarding and who they're facing, getting her players to buy in and lock in on that end. And then shooting. They're one of the highest three-point rates in the league. They're kind of embracing a little bit of that Celtics kind of strategy, what we've seen from Boston in the NBA the last couple of years. Obviously, the three-point revolution's been going on for a while, but Boston really took it a notch up the last couple of years, and they got a championship from it. And that's basically what you're seeing in Golden State in terms of how often they take the three, and it's been working for them. So I think you're going to see more teams kind of move towards that, but it's been a really cool story in the WNBA this year.
The kinds of players that are going to be available for an expansion team like Portland, like where are they picking from? What is that process like?
Yeah, it's going to be even tougher for them than Golden State, because not only are they taking everyone's seventh best player, but they have to share those players with Toronto. On the other hand, the WNBA CBA, the players just opted out, which means they are negotiating a new CBA now. And because they kind of saw that coming for the last few years, a lot of players intentionally signed contracts that went through 2025 because they knew they wanted to be a free agent after 2025 to be able to sign their next deal heading into the 2026 season under the new CBA, in hopes that the salary cap would go up, in hopes that they could get a bigger and better deal going into 2026. So there are a ton of big name free agents because they planned it that way. So when you look up and down the All-Star rosters, outside of everyone on the rookie deal, probably 90% of them are free agents. Sabrina Ionescu is a free agent. She's from the Bay Area. She may go to Golden State. She obviously has Oregon ties. She may be on the table for Portland. Brianna Stewart's a free agent. Asia Wilson is a free agent. MVP favorite Nafisa Collier is a free agent. It's a who's who of who are the best players in the league are free agents. So if an expansion team wanted to and they had the pull, they could be competitive right away next year, not through the expansion draft, but through free agency. It's just a matter of if they're going to be able to lure some of those big names.
Just the concept of Sabrina in Portland, would be the needle mover that gets an expansion team rolling and rolling in quickly. Obviously, you mentioned Golden State, and you know she's from that area too, so they could be in play. But just that possibility is amazing. So you know you hit on something, right? And you're in Indy. There are headlines coming out from the CBA talks, the players in the league, like, where does that stand right now, and what's kind of the attitude around that?
Yeah, there have been some talks about a potential work stoppage. Obviously, no one wants that to happen, and hopefully it doesn't. But I think the players are prepared to go that route if they have to. They know their value at this point, and especially with Caitlin Clark in the league and some of these other players, Sabrina and Asia Wilson, Nafisa Collier, the league is more marketable than ever. There are more high-profile names than ever, and they know their value at this point. They know the ratings that they are drawing, and they are not willing to settle for anything less than they deserve. So they've made it very clear. The WNBA Players Association put out a statement the other day after they had a meeting. 40 players showed up to this meeting. It was just earlier this week, and they basically said, hey, we put out this proposal, and the WNBA is not willing to go as far as we want them to, and we don't want to budge. So if the WNBA isn't going to meet us here, we will be prepared for a work stoppage. So again, we hope that doesn't happen, but I think the players now more than any other negotiation in league history are very prepared to stand up for what they believe they are worth.
Now, you know, putting the pieces together, getting that CBA in place, you would assume affects the timeline for like the expansion draft and other things with this Portland team. Portland's still without a GM hire, still without a coach hire. I'm wondering if maybe the Portland team is also waiting for CBA clarification before they make these moves, or how do you feel like all that timeline, like who's waiting first, right? Can you even have an expansion draft before the CBA gets done?
Yeah, that's a good question. I honestly am not sure. It seems like maybe a little bit of a game of chicken at this point.
Yeah.
But I would think that you probably need a new CBA, because when you have that expansion draft, you're drafting contracts,
right?
And the contracts are tied to that CBA. So, and you're certainly going to need a new CBA prior to the rookie draft, if nothing else, when Portland and everyone else is going to draft the rookies, because the CBA is going to affect the new rookie scales and things like that. So there are a lot of things that may end up being put on hold. Even if there's not necessarily, you know, a delay to the start of games in the season, there might be a delay to some of those things, like the expansion draft, like the rookie draft, like free agency in the offseason, things like that.
Now, when play gets going, when this Portland team takes the floor, it's going to bring with it this huge wave of new fans, not just to the Portland team here, but to the league as a whole. What should new fans of a WNBA team and of the WNBA, what should they know about the WNBA? Give us your primer for people that are coming in from the outside.
Yeah, it's a league with a lot of loyal fans. And I kind of think about, is it Rob Lowe who wears the NFL hat? And everyone jokes about how he's just like a fan of the league.
Yeah,
I think the WNBA has a lot of that energy where it's still new enough. It's you know, started in the late 90s. It's not even 30 years old yet, where you haven't developed these like generational fans who of a specific team who pass that fandom to their kids and their kids and their kids, like you have in, say, baseball or sports like that that have been around forever. And so a lot of very loyal WNBA fans are either loyal to their player, such as Caitlin Clark, Sabrina, or to the league as a whole. They're just huge fans of the league, and you have like the iconic orange WNBA hoodie is the equivalent of like the NFL hat, right? And so there obviously are a lot of very passionate fans of teams too, but I think to me it feels almost a little bit more of like a whole league community. Like everyone is rooting for the league to grow, even if they're rooting for one team and against a rival team. They also just want to see the league grow because it hasn't been as well established for as long yet.
We'll get you out on this. I know you got to pop on CBS Sports here in a minute, but appreciate your time from Mindy. I know some of your work, too, with Her Hoop Stats comes around the betting space with the WNBA. What have you seen out of like the betting market in this league, and just how, you know, sports betting and wagering as a whole has become more popular? And there's some you know, pull back on that a little bit depending on the states that you're in, but what's the overall market like in the WNBA betting and some of those dynamics at play there?
Yeah, it's really been reflecting the growth of the league as a whole, I think, this year and even in the last few years. I started in journalism in 2019. I started with the betting in 2021. And at that time, you would get spreads and totals, maybe 10 a.m. the game of, and that's it. That's all you got. Since then, you know, a year later, you're starting to get them the night before, and then the next year you're starting to get things like player props, and now you have things like first basket. You have all of these different things that sort of mirror what you see like in the NBA, where you can bet on anything. You can bet on what happens in the first minute of the game, right? There are all these sort of niche things you can bet on. And the WNBA has gotten to that point where it was kind of an afterthought for sports books maybe 4 years ago. Now it's one of the main things that they pay attention to this time of year. Baseball and WNBA are probably the two biggest things they're paying attention to. And so the options have gotten a lot more expansive. The markets are a lot sharper, and there's just so much more attention on the league. There are so many more people betting it. You see, you know, the social media content creators are now getting into WNBA, things like that. It's just really skyrocketed.
You got, what is it tonight? 3-point contest tonight. And what else is on tap this weekend for you?
We got skills challenge tonight, 3-point contest tonight, All-Star game tomorrow. I do got a bet on the All-Star game if you want it, Judah.
Please, lay it out for the people.
We're going with Team Collier, -4.5. Caitlin Clark, obviously. Team Clark has no Caitlin Clark, and they also are missing another starter in Satu Sabli. Unfortunately for the Oregon fans out there, yeah, Won't get to see her play in the All-Star game either. She was going to be a starter. So they're down two starters, Team Clark is. And Caitlin also sort of, you know, they did the draft thing. Caitlin kind of drafted her friends, which is fine. I think I would too, right? No one cares about winning this game. I would rather play with my friends and have fun. But because of that, Team Collier ended up being a little bit more talented anyway. She kind of drafted, like, who are the best basketball players, as opposed to, like, let me just draft my teammates. And so I think Team Collier just has a big talent advantage and a health advantage. So -4.5 on Team Collier is the play.
Love that. Team Collier -4.5 on your local DraftKings is what we work with out here in Oregon. So appreciate you handing out the sharp bets out there in Indy. Be well, you know, enjoy that St. Elmo's. I know you're doing the full-fledged Indy experience, my friend. And thanks for popping on with us in Portland.
Hey, yeah, appreciate you having me, Judah.
I love it. Calvin Wetzel, basketball analyst with Her Hoop Stats and CBS Sports. You can follow at Her Hoop Stats for good women's basketball content, both collegiately and the WNBA, of course, with the Portland Fire coming in next season. All right, when we come back, we'll get our big splash and play a little punch in audio. In hour two, KGW sports anchor Orlando Sanchez will talk Dame back to Portland and some other big things in Portland sports. We'll talk a little Mariners second half that gets underway tonight and the latest in NBA expansion to Seattle with Tim Booth of the Seattle Times in hour three as well. Judah Newby filling in right here on the Bald Faced Truth and the BFT Radio Network.